Welcome to Camp Constitution Radio with your host, Hal Shurtleff. The show is heard on WBCQ, The Planet, every Monday and Thursdays. Mondays is at 7, I think, and Thursdays at 7:30. But if you're listening to this on WBCQ, this is the right time to be. I think they've recently made a change on the time, which is fine. But if you're not listening it to, if you're not listening to the show on WBCQ, you can also pick it up on our flagship podcast station or format. That's Podomatic, I should say platform, Podomatic. Also iHeart, Amazon, Spotify, you know, have about a half a dozen other platforms. And occasionally on YouTube, but not this particular show. Anyway, it's brought to you by Camp Constitution, which, among other things, runs a week-long family camp. And this year's camp coming up July 14th to the 19th at the beautiful Singing Hills Christian Camp and Retreat Center. And we've got a great lineup, as we do every year, including we're expecting Tucker Carlson to show up and teach a class, probably something to do with journalism, I would imagine. And we have Julie Wilkinson. She's the lady who played the abortion nurse in the movie Unplanned, the Abby Johnson story. Pastor David Whitney of the Institute of the Constitution, Alex Newman of the New American Magazine, as well as the Sentinel Report. And he's got a show on Frank's speech and a whole bunch of other great instructors, and a great time to be had by all. We have a ladies retreat coming up next month in Alton Bay Christian Conference Center, April 12th to the 14th. And finally, we have stuff going on all the time, but as far as the weekend events and the camps, we have a weekend retreat, family retreat, last week in September at the Camp Sentinel in Tuftonboro, New Hampshire, which is just a few towns from, we are in Alton. And if you go to our website, campconstitution.net, and click on the calendar, you'll find that we're going to be in a lot of places. I'm going to be up in the county, up in Arista County, in a few weeks, giving presentations on the topic of Planned Parenthood and its racist roots. And I've got some presentations here in central New Hampshire, Concord, and as well as here in Alton. And in early May, we're bringing in Vince Ellison. He's going to be speaking in Greater Boston on our behalf, as well as New Hampshire. And so you just go to our website and you'll see our calendar and you'll be able to find out the events. Another busy week. Just a few days ago, our beloved fearful leader, President Joseph Robinette Biden, gave this incredibly inspirational address. And it was just so motivated because he does so much to unify this great country. His leadership is not quite. Actually, I call it not the State of the Union, but the Hate of the Union and Yelling Fest. He trashed about more than half of the people of the country. He puts Ukraine in front of the United States. But it was interesting. Marjorie Taylor Greene kind of confronting him prior to his so-called speech, and gave her this little button, I guess. It had the name of the poor young nursing student that was murdered by an illegal alien. And when she heckled him, say her name, he did. He got the name wrong, of course. And he used the word illegal. She was killed by an illegal. Wow, that didn't set the left. Oh, the left went crazy. They were more upset that Biden used the word illegal instead of undocumented or migrant, that's the term they're using now, than the murder itself. This is how perverse and disgusting these people are. Biden also was pushing abortion. Here's this good Catholic boy that's, and he's looking at the Supreme Court, of course, the members of the Supreme Court that, and he said, he's basically, again, threatening them. Well, I tell you what, the abortion is one of the major pillars of the left. Killing unborn babies and even babies after they come out is such a priority That just shows you the depravity. You know, when Vince Ellison says that the Democrat Party is the most evil party or the evil organization in the history of the world, I'm not sure if it's the most evil ever, but he makes an excellent case. And this is an example of that. And of course, when anytime he makes reference to killing babies, all the Democrats, every one of them, I think there was one exception. There's only one pro-life Democrat in all of the House of Representatives. I don't know about the Senate. I don't think there are any in the Senate. Well, there's a, you know, fewer. There's only 51 or 52. It just shows you just how ungodly this country has become. It's really, I hate to use the word frightening, but my goodness, when these Democrats just cheer, they just love. Now here, my miserable delegation from New Hampshire. You know, we're more of a red state, a little bit purple state. We have our New Hampshire's House and Senate, State House and Senate is Republican, Governor's Republican, Governor's Council Republican, but we don't seem to be able to elect any Republicans to to Congress. And it's been a while since we've had a Republican. We used to have a few good ones before we moved up here. And what's happened is that the lefties have moved in from Massachusetts and New Jersey, and they get active. But that doesn't mean the Republicans don't lose by a whole lot, but they do lose. And I want to kind of switch gears from Biden's miserable. Oh, I do want to mention the State of the Union. It is in the Constitution under Article 2, where the president, the details in the U.S. Constitution, where the president's duties and powers. And by the way, he has very few powers. And it does say he will give from time to time an address. He doesn't necessarily have to do it in person, and it doesn't have to be in a certain time. It says here, section through Article 2, Section 3, he shall from time to time give to the Congress information of the State of the Union and recommend to their consideration such measures as he shall judge necessary and expedient. He may, on extraordinary occasions, convene both houses. Well, gonna get it. That part isn't. So he will give a State of the Union, but he didn't give a State of the Union. He just gave a campaign appeal, and most people were surprised that he lasted that long as he did. He did stumble and mutter, and I think when he's angry and full of hate, which is most of the time, well, a good portion of the time, he doesn't seem to stutter and stumble as much. Almost like the adrenaline kicks in. You know, just go ahead and tell everybody how much you hate the United States. Just promote hatred, go after your enemies. Here's a man that's a multimillionaire, owns three mansions, all kinds of stuff, fancy sports cars. Yeah, this country's been so bad to him. And he spent his whole adult life making life miserable for the average citizen. Just look at his so-called his career. Now, this is one of the things that the left wants to do, and of course, to help consolidate its power, is to make Washington, D.C. a state. Now, Washington, D.C. is not a territory. It is different than, and it's not obviously part of a state. It was created by the Constitution, and it was carved out of Maryland and Virginia. These are the two states that carved out that gave up sort of the, and it's I don't know how many square miles it is. It's not a big area geographic. I think the population is somewhere like 600,000. You know, so it may be as populated as a least populous state. But it was created to be the capital. It was created in Article One. I think it was John Adams that was the first one to actually occupy D.C. They call it a swamp because it was a lot of, you know, prior to it being a state, or the I'm sorry, the prior to be the nation's capital. So it's a unique entity. It's not a territory. And Article 4. And this is where we find the relationships between the states. I'll just read Article 4, Section 3. New states may be admitted by the Congress into this union, but no new state shall be formed or erected within the jurisdiction of any other state Nor any state be formed by the junction of two or more states or parts of states without the consent of the legislature of the states concerned, as well as that of the Congress. The Congress shall have power to dispose of and make all needful rules and regulations respecting the territories or other properties belonging to the United States. So the DC, again, it's not a territory like Puerto Rico. And it's let's see, you had Alaska. And you had Hawaii that were territories that became states. Those were the last two states entered into the Union. And there's been a number of proposed states. If you look up, you know, states, proposed states, there's probably a dozen or more. One of them is, I think, the eastern part of Washington State. This would be the more conservative area. And they have good reason because they... You know, they're not, their voices isn't being heard in Washington. And also there was a between Northern California and Southern Oregon, there's, I forget the name of that proposed state, but in order for a state to be formed from parts of another state, you need the approval of, again, as I just read, you need the approval of the legislature of that state plus Congress. And there's been three states added into the Union that way. The first one was Kentucky. Kentucky was part of Virginia. I think it was 1792, was really on in the Constitution, where Virginia had to, you know, secede that part of its area, and then Kentucky was formed. Then it was Maine. Now, a lot of people don't know this, but Maine was part of Massachusetts, even though it wasn't contiguous. There's a little... a few miles between you go into New Hampshire, Maine, you're in Massachusetts, and then you're in New Hampshire, and then it doesn't take long. You go through about several towns, then you're in Maine. But Maine actually is a large geographic area. It's you can put all of the other five New England states into Maine and still have a little room. I think it's like 39,000 square miles. So Massachusetts yielded a big chunk of its territory to create Maine. And when it was created, it was really to like a balance of power in Congress. It came in, of course, as a free state. And I think Missouri came in as a slave state. And then the third one was West Virginia. Now, this was a little different. I think it was extra constitutional. Virginia had seceded from the Union in 1861. But there was areas of Western Virginia that did not support secession. So they had a meeting, I forget where it was, if it was in whatever city it was or town in Western Virginia, and they sort of nullified the act of secession, and then they created a state. So it was interesting. They didn't get any permission from the capital in Richmond because they had seceded. So they created a state in 1863. And the reason why I mention this is there was a vote for D.C. statehood in the House of Representatives. It did not pass. Our member of Congress here in New Hampshire, Chris Pappas, supported it. So here in New Hampshire, we have a proposed amendment to the Constitution that will secede New Hampshire from the Union. Now, when you proposed a amendment to the Constitution, it's a little bit of a complicated process, and it should be. Amendments should not be added easily or frivolously. And the first thing it's calling for, first it needs 60% of both House and Senate. The New Hampshire House and New Hampshire Senate. Then if it gets that much, then it goes on to the a referendum, a question on the ballot in the next general election. And there you need 3/5 of the voters to approve. And that's sort of a high threshold. That's like 66%. That's a high threshold. And at that point, it gets on, becomes part of the Constitution. However, the question of whether or not a state can secede from the Union was pretty much settled back in 1865. So, but I just wrote an article that I haven't posted yet. I sent it to a couple of New Hampshire newspaper and an online entity, and I thought, why not Belknap County seceding, and instead of seceding, I'm sorry, not seceding, but becoming the 51st state. And I made the case. And now Belknap County is surrounded. It's a one of the most conservative area, or the conservative county in New Hampshire. We have, I think we have 18 and 19 seats at in the House of Representatives in Concord, New Hampshire, and all but one are Republicans. And we just lost one seat in the last election, but they were all Republicans. And I think we have a senator. I don't think the senator is the senator we have that represents me isn't just from Belknap. He represents, it's only 24 senators, so the district did things a little different. But our congressional delegation does not speak on our behalf whatsoever. The population of our county, it's the smallest county in New Hampshire. It's about 72,000. I think we're about 70,000 square feet, give or take a little bit, square miles, I'm sorry, give or take a little bit. We're, a lot of that consists of lakes, including Lake, well, it's 70,000 square miles. But if you can add that we have Lake Winnipesaukee and a few other sizable lakes that make it bigger, but you know, but as far as land mass, it's about 70,000 square miles. And but it, again, it's a pretty conservative area. Our member of Congress, Chris Pappas, does not speak for us. He is a far leftist. He is basically an arm of the Democrat National Convention, as well as a committee, I should say, as well as the Biden administration. So when the voters of New Hampshire, or the district where we only have two congressional districts, when they sent him, he says he represents the people in this district, but he actually represents the deep state. So he's misinforming people when he says, oh, you know, I represent. Now, he should say, you send me to Washington. I may be from this district in the state, but I don't represent you. I represent the deep state, the interests of the deep state, and whatever they promote is what I promote. And it just shows every time he sends an email telling you what he's doing, what's he up to, what's he up to. Our two U.S. senators are as equally as bad. They don't live in Belknap County, as our congressman doesn't live here. Our House Representative doesn't live here either. They don't. You only never see them in the area. So my proposal is to create the 51st state, and it was somewhat tongue in cheek, but Chris Pappas is going to have a little difficulty saying, "Well, that's not." That's you're being an insurrectionist. You can't do that. Well, you're okay with DC being a state. And the only reason why you want DC to be a state is because you'll have two US senators who are basically communists, and one member of the House of Representatives who's basically a communist. That's the only reason why you want DC to be a state. You don't care whether or not the people that live in DC can vote in elections. Now, DC, they do have, they can vote in the presidential election. And let me see, well, that was one of the, I think it was the 24th Amendment. Let me see, let me look that one up. They have three electoral votes, so they can. They do have a member of the, they do have a representative, but he's non-voting, he or she is non-voting. Let's see. I think it's the 23rd Amendment. Let me check that out here. Yeah, the 23rd Amendment that was ratified in 1961. The district constituting the seat of government of the United States shall appoint, in such matter as Congress may direct, a number of electors of president and vice president equal to the whole number of senators and representatives in Congress to which the district would be entitled if it were a state, but in no event more than the least populous state. They shall be in addition to those appointed by the states, but they shall be considered for the purposes of the election of president and vice president to be electors appointed by a state, and they shall meet in the district and perform such duties as provided by the 12th Article of Amendment. So they do have three, they can vote in the presidential election, But and of course, it's a city, so they do have a mayor and they do have city councils that represent their interests. But I think the best way around this, if you were to extend them a vote, would be to just give those seats. You know what part of Maryland, what part of DC that came out of Maryland? So Maryland would have not maybe necessarily an extra district, but they would simply be able to vote in and be considered a Maryland. And then the part that Virginia gave away, that part would be considered for the purpose of election, Virginia. That's, I think, the best way to do it, but not create a separate state. Although I think it's okay the way it is. That's the way it's been since the state was, or the DC was created by Congress. And that's the way it is. It's not, it was never set up to be a state that has, I mean, it's going to be a state in a city. And then, of course, with the state, you have all other things that concern the states. Let me just see here. Article 1, Section 8 is, I believe, where you find how DC is established. Here it is here. Article 1, Section 8. Oh, I'm not sure what clause it is. Probably Clause 12. To exercise exclusive legislation in all cases whatsoever over a district not exceeding 10 miles square, as made by secession of particular states in the acceptance of Congress, become the seat of government of the United States, and to exercise like authority over all places purchased by the consent of the legislature of the state in which the same shall be, for the erection of forts, magazines, and arsenals, etc. So it was created by Congress as to be the state capital. I'm sorry, the U.S. Capitol. That was the purpose of it. And before DC was created, before there was a before DC, before there was the Constitution was ratified, Philadelphia was the U.S. Capitol for a short time, and then New York City was the, so no one's suggesting New York City at the time, for the short time that it went, in fact, when Washington took his inaugural address, he took the inaugural address in Lower Manhattan, and no one suggested that New York City became, at that time, becomes a separate state. So that would be a way to do it too, just abolish DC altogether, or and then say, hey, just move the state, the US Capitol, to a particular state where it was before. That way, you don't have that problem. Anyway, because if you've been to DC, if you talk about a swamp, it's not really a swamp. And I think of a swamp. Swamp is a really a vital part of the ecosystem. It's more like a sewer. Now, sewers are important because you need a place to get rid of the waste, especially in a big city. If you didn't have a sewer system, it would be a real stinking mess. So sewers aren't by themselves bad things, but they get rid of bad things. You know, they get rid of waste. So I think we should refer to DC not as the swamp, but as the sewer. And not swamp creatures, but sewer creatures. Okay, well, we got a few minutes left. Oh yes, also in my article, I, and again, it was somewhat tongue in cheek, but in I mentioned that we would the state of Belknap, or I would call it the Free State, the Free Republic of Belknap. We would have a very small government. We would be the smallest state, population-wise as well as geographical. So we would beat out Rhode Island. We would be the only state to be surrounded by another state. We would be the second state to be bordered only by one state. Maine is right now the only state that's bordered by one state, and that would be New Hampshire. And I mentioned that in our proposed constitution of our state, we would have no compulsory education laws, and that every single government school, because we would extend the same rights and privileges as the towns have now, towns and cities. There's only one city in Belknap County. But so they could still have their government schools, but we wouldn't make them, we wouldn't give the federal go or these governments a monopoly or a near monopoly on educating our children. That we wouldn't have, so the children wouldn't be forced to go to those schools. Therefore, there'd be a vibrant private school. And the compulsory education laws is kind of interesting. If you ask the average person, They have probably have no idea where they came from, like when that wasn't it always that way? That's what they'll be thinking. And of course, that isn't the case. It wasn't always that way. Those things didn't happen until Horace Mann came on the scene and rejected the faith of his parents. His father was a Calvinist preacher from Vermont. And he traveled to Germany in the 1830s, I think it was, and he went to Prussia. And Prussia had government-controlled schools, and he was very impressed with the Prussian schools. And he came back to the United States, and he, in so many words, said, "I've seen the future in Prussia, and we need to do it here." So he pushed legislation in Massachusetts that Massachusetts likes to brag, "We're the first state that has compulsory education laws." Well, Massachusetts was one of the most highly educated states prior, the citizens. Charles Bulfinch, who was a great architect, he designed the state capitol, a beautiful state capitol in Massachusetts, in Boston. He did a survey back in, I think it was 1810, and he said that something like 95% of the children were very literate. They all were in school, and he said the ones that weren't had access to schools in case, they wanted to go there. And so we didn't have any of those laws. And you look at our colonial government, you look at the high level of instruction in 1776. You look at the Federalist Papers, they were written for farmers. Today they would challenge most college students because most college students are semi-illiterate. So we didn't need compulsory education laws. And it's not to have most parents do not want their children to be ignorant. And anyway, so Massachusetts was the first one, and some of the southern states, some years after the Civil War, they eventually adopted these. And every single state, and you look at the state of education today, it's miserable, it's horrible, and it's designed that way. That's the sad thing. It is designed to be what it is today. And if people say, "Oh, that's a conspiracy theory," well, why then are the schools so bad? And why, with all the billions and billions of dollars spent, why haven't we solved the problem? Because they don't want to solve it. What you see is what not only what you get, but what they want. And we've discussed this before. My late friend Sam Blumenfeld learned that back in early 1960s, that it was that the American children are being deliberately dumbed down. They're using a method of reading that's designed to teach deaf children, and deaf children cannot hear sounds. They can't make, therefore they can't learn phonics, intensive phonics. And a very good man, I think, Thomas Reverend Gallaudet, who started a school for the blind, said, "Hey, maybe this method of look say could be used for children who have hearing. It might be a better way for them to learn quicker." And it was experimented in Boston in the 1840s, and it was a dismal failure. They got rid of it. But that's because decent thinking people realized that it wasn't working. But it reared its ugly. It took another 100 years. The left never gives up, folks. The left is always, they're playing the long game. The average conservative is looking at the next election cycle. They're looking at the next generation. Anyway, we only got a few seconds left. We want to thank you for listening to Camp Constitution Radio. Please, not only this show, but this station is incredible. The owner of the station, Alan Weiner, and his wife, they really do believe in free speech. So encourage not only listen to the station, consider hosting your own show. Go to their website and you can inquire about that. Free speech is what Alan's about, and he's an incredible guy. And again, thank you for listening. You've been listening to Camp Constitution Radio with your host, Hal Shurtleff. And until next week, may God richly bless you.